to Local Talk on KHOI, COVID Response Community Radio in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, together with my co-host, Ann Kinzel, with us via Zoom.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening in. As usual, we'll hear a roundup of the past week's news, thanks to Dennis Hart. We'll be checking in with Mary Greeley Medical Center for an update from the hospital and clinic, and from Susan Buyazda, Ames Public Relations Officer, who'll be here to bring various updates from the city. Ursula, how's the weather looking?
Well, it's April, and today looks like it. Rain is likely in parts of today and again at night, with a chance of thunderstorms tonight. However, the rest of the week looks pleasant, with sunny days, clear nights, and temperatures ranging from the 50s to the 60s during the days. Tomorrow is predicted to get up to 76. Nights should be beautiful and clear, but can still get cold. On Thursday night, freezing 32 degrees is predicted. But early flowers are out. I've been enjoying them this weekend. I used to talk about the wild ones on Local Talk, but have not done so for a while, mainly because of the coronavirus, which it seems like we all have been dealing with the ultimate wild one, so what can be said about that? However, are you seeing the videos on YouTube of how wild animals are beginning to enter into empty cities all over the world? It's really interesting to see large animals like wild hogs, elk, wild goats, civet cats, monkeys, pumas, are walking around the streets of city streets all over the world, and turtles are populating beaches laying eggs, and dolphins are swimming around empty harbors coming up to the edge of the docks. And, of course, there's always lots of ducks and geese walking around. It's really fascinating. So if you haven't seen it, it's really worth a look. Now, of course, around here, wild animals in town are nothing new, right? That's something we're all used to. For instance, my neighborhood deer herd is usually standing around my driveway when I go to KHOI at dawn, and they watch me to go to work. But I have to say there's something happening here, too, that I have noticed that the animals are beginning to behave differently, the wild ones. Yesterday I went to Lake Laverne and Central Campus to enjoy the sun and joined a lot of people who were out there kind of treating Central Campus like a beach. So first of all, this goose came right up to me when I was sitting next to the lake, and she was probably hoping for food. But then when it turned out I didn't have any food, the goose just hung out in the sun with me about 2 feet away and just sat there and, I don't know, just mellowed out with me. And there was just something brazen about the way it was behaving. And I also noticed that the geese were just kind of ambling around the streets in a way I'd never seen them before. So it's interesting to see, you know, what happens. Not sure exactly how this all looks to them, but certainly they've noticed, too, that things have changed. So anyway, here's Dennis Hart with a roundup of Iowa news.
Hello again. I'm happy we're able to get together at this electronic table on this first Monday in April. Of course, recent news around the state has been dominated by the coronavirus, and it was again today when Governor Kim Reynolds held a news conference late Monday morning to announce that three more people in Iowa had died from the coronavirus, bringing the death toll to 25. She said 78 more people had been confirmed to be infected with the virus, bringing the total to 946 confirmed cases. She acknowledged that the past week had been, in her words, especially hard. Today, she ordered malls, bingo halls, pool halls, museums, zoos, playgrounds, and campgrounds, among other places, to stay closed through April 30th. She urged Iowans to stay home this week. All this coming as more and more leaders around the state have been pushing the governor to issue a shelter-in-place order that could keep more residents home during the coronavirus outbreak. On Friday, the State Board of Medicine unanimously voted to recommend that the governor issue such an order. That action came after a similar request had been made by the State Medical Society. The vast majority of other states have issued shelter-in-place or stay-at-home directives. Last week, one of the nation's key figures in the fight against the coronavirus, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said he did not understand why every state had not issued such orders. Governor Reynolds said Friday that perhaps Dr. Fauci, who is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, did not have all the information about what Iowa has done. Yesterday, Dr. Fauci said that states like Iowa that do not have stay-at-home orders are putting themselves at risk. But Governor Reynolds had continued to say that data did not indicate a shelter-in-place directive was necessary in Iowa. She said, in her words, "I can't lock the state down. I can't lock everybody at home." She said the steps she already had taken were the equivalent of a shelter-in-place order, and that if she issued such an order, the mental well-being of Iowans could be affected and domestic violence could increase. Just last week, the governor had announced she was extending business and school closures around the state to April 30th. Bans on gatherings of more than 10 people and the suspension of non-essential surgeries were also extended. In connection with all this, Iowa lawmakers suspended their legislative session until the end of the month. Among those testing positive for the coronavirus last week, three Marshalltown City employees. Marshalltown City offices and workspaces were being deep cleaned, and employees were being urged to work from home and to social distance. Still in Marshalltown, a Latino advocacy group was questioning whether meatpacking giant JBS was doing enough to protect the 2,700 workers at its Marshalltown pork processing plant. The Iowa League of United Latin American Citizens said employees at the plant are crowded on the company's production floor, in locker rooms, and in other parts of the facility. And while the coronavirus continued to bring an increasing number of deaths and illnesses around Iowa, it also continued to bring great economic pain. Last week, more than 58,000 state residents applied for unemployment benefits. That's the most single-week claims in the history of this state. Across the nation, more than 6.5 million people filed jobless claims. Unfortunately, that also was a single-week record. Back here in Iowa, some good news. The Federal Emergency Management Agency awarded the state $44 million on Saturday to cover most of the cost of buying personal protective gear such as isolation gowns, masks, and ventilators for healthcare workers. And a bit more good news, SelectQuote of West Des Moines, a company that provides insurance price comparisons, announced it plans to hire 150 workers. And the Iowa Workforce Development Office announced that state residents no longer needed to use all of their paid leave before they applied for unemployment. Meanwhile, this past Friday was the first day most business owners in Iowa could begin applying for forgivable, federally-backed coronavirus relief loans. The amount each business could be eligible for depends on the size of the company's payroll before the pandemic hit. Among other coronavirus-related stories, word last week that agreement had been reached between the state of Iowa and abortion advocates to allow Iowa women to continue to obtain essential surgical abortions, even as the state moves to limit non-essential surgical procedures. Also last week, the Des Moines Register had word that a new state report showed some Iowa hospitals are not sharing enough information about bed availability. And last week, school district officials around Iowa told the Register they're working on contingencies that could include keeping schools shut through the end of the school year. There was also word that the state Supreme Court had issued an order suspending grand jury hearings and criminal jury trials until mid-July in an effort to slow down the spread of the coronavirus. In Des Moines last week, word that one of the biggest events on Central Iowa's summer calendar had been canceled. The 8035 Music Festival will not take place this coming July because of disruptions caused by the virus outbreak. Organizers plan to bring it back next year. About 35,000 people have attended the music festival in previous years. In Altoona, the Adventureland Amusement Park had planned to open May 2nd, but said last week it would not open until May 16th. And the Iowa Secretary of State's office announced it will mail every registered voter in Iowa an absentee ballot request form ahead of the state's June 2nd primary. The plan comes as concerns about in-person voting have mounted because of the coronavirus outbreak. Last week, Secretary of State Paul Pate said the June 2nd primary will go on as planned, and he extended the early voting period for mailed ballots up to 40 days. That means Iowans will be able to cast mail ballots starting April 23rd. And even though the coronavirus dominated the news last week, there were other stories that surfaced. Among them, Governor Kim Reynolds appointed a new state Supreme Court judge. He is Matthew McDermott of Des Moines. He will fill the vacancy created by Justice David Wiggins' retirement. Also last week, a federal judge ordered the state of Iowa to end the use of a physical restraining device at a Central Iowa facility for juvenile delinquent boys with mental disabilities. The judge also ordered the state training school for boys in Eldora to reform its use of isolation as a form of punishment. That ruling came in a class action lawsuit filed 3 years ago by the group Disability Rights Iowa, which focuses on issues involving people with disabilities and mental illness, and Children's Rights Incorporated, a New York-based nonprofit youth advocacy group. There was also word about a fire that had gutted a church in Pleasantville. Three nearby houses also suffered damage in the blaze that destroyed the Pleasantville Christian Church last Monday. No one was injured. The cause of the fire had not been determined. Fire also ravaged an apartment complex in Des Moines and one in Pleasant Hill. One person was injured and dozens were displaced. And in Madison County, a woman's body was found after a house fire near Winterset. 64-year-old Deborah Robinson was found inside her home. Officials did not know what caused the fire. In Des Moines, a motorcyclist died in a multi-vehicle crash this past Saturday night. The fatal victim was identified as 21-year-old Aaron Bjork. And still in Des Moines, A truck struck and killed a female pedestrian and her dog on Sunday morning. The driver tried to flee the scene, but police arrested him on charges of first-degree murder and animal neglect. In Scott County, a judge granted an injunction against a Quad Cities couple accused of running two telemarketing companies that defrauded customers in 13 states. They were identified as Misty and Paul Barnes, who ran the telemarketing firms PM Specialties and Milestone Consulting. There was also word last week that Simpson College had named its first female president. She is Marcia Kelleher, who will take the reins at the Indianola College June 1st. She replaces Jay Simmons, who served from 2013 to 2019, and interim president Bob Lane. Kelleher has served as president and CEO of Walsh College in Troy, Michigan. In Warren County, the Board of Supervisors authorized bonding for $20 million to build the county's law center. The cash will pay for construction of an 80,000-square-foot facility housing four courtrooms and a jail with up to 88 beds in the center of Indianola Square. Meanwhile, back in Des Moines, some apartment building owners have sued the city's Zoning Board of Adjustment for approving a big illuminated sign that is planned for the roof of the Hotel Fort Des Moines. The apartment building owners say light pollution from the sign would force them to reduce rents at their buildings. Each of the 18 letters spelling out Hotel Fort Des Moines would be 2 to 3 feet wide. Meanwhile, there were a couple of feel-good stories out there last week amidst all the bad news we've been having. One of those stories came from the small town of Earlham in Madison County. Seems that an anonymous donor surprised that town of 1,400 people by purchasing gift cards to three local businesses and arranging for the city to send them to every household. The gift cards were for $50, and each of the town's 549 households received an envelope with three of those cards inside. That amounts to more than $82,000 in gift cards, bought by someone who just wanted to help out during this time of uncertainty in Iowa. And here's the other feel-good story. It's about the new dome that was put on top of the Marshall County Courthouse last week. As you quite likely remember, the dome and the spire that had sat on top of that lovely courthouse in Marshalltown came crashing down on that unforgettable July day 2 years ago when a tornado hit. Marshalltown is still recovering from that terrible day, but last Tuesday it got a visible ray of relief when a new dome was lifted to the top of that courthouse. Maybe, just maybe, that's a symbol not just of Marshalltown's rebirth, but that of all of us once this coronavirus gets swept out of our system. And that, my friends, is your look at another big, big week of news from all around the state last week. I'm Dennis Hart, trying very hard to stay healthy and safe, as I hope you are as well, and planning to be right back here on Friday with word about what makes news in Ames this week as we all try to get through this together wherever we are.
We'll get through this together. I know somewhere, somehow, right at the end of the tunnel. Getting brighter now. So hold your head up, put a smile on your face. Soon enough we'll be back in the race. We'll get through this together. I know some way, somehow. We used to go to lunch on Friday, just for a little treat. We used to go to lunch on Friday, just for a little treat. But now we can't do that no more. You call it in and it comes to the door. We do this together. I know some way, somehow. Seems like only yesterday I was having coffee with a friend. Seems like only yesterday I was having coffee with a friend. But then this virus came along and put an end to that old song. We'll get through this together. I know some way, somehow. We'll get through this together. I know some way, somehow. There's light at the end of the tunnel. It's getting brighter now. So hold your head up, put a smile on your face. Soon enough we'll be back in the race. We'll get through this together. I know some way, somehow. Thinking about my friends and family, I hope they're doing well. Thinking about my friends and family, I hope they're doing well. Soon enough, this will end. Then we can laugh and sing again. We'll get through this together. I know some way, somehow. We'll get through this together. I know some way, somehow. There's light at the end of the tunnel. It's getting brighter now. So hold your head up, put a smile on your face. Soon enough we'll be back in the race. We'll get through this together. I know some way, somehow, yeah. I know some way, somehow, yeah. I know some way, somehow.
We'll Get Through This Together by Ames's own Larry Red Stoltenberg. And this is Local Talk on KHOI. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour, together with Ann Kinzel. Steve Sullivan is Director of Marketing and Community Relations for Mary Greeley Medical Center. Thank you, Steve, for coming back to KHOI to give us an update from the hospital and the clinic. Numbers have been growing in counties that might be using Mary Greeley. Story County is now reporting 5 positive tests, Boone 3, Marshall 10. Hamilton, Webster, and Hardin are now reporting 1. So what's happening at Mary Greeley and McFarland?
Well, I can speak for Mary Greeley. We still have 2 patients at the hospital. They're proceeding fine and could be discharged even sometime this week. The big news, however, and you're getting the big scoop, is that tomorrow we will be beginning full visitor restrictions. So with just a few exceptions, we will not be allowing visitors at the hospital. Most hospitals in our area, larger hospitals, especially in Des Moines, of course, have already done this last week. So we've decided, based on CDC Centers for Disease Control recommendations, we should be doing the same thing. Additionally, all staff, non-clinical in particular, will be wearing face masks, will be required to wear a face mask in the hospital. That's also starting on Tuesday. We'll be wearing cloth masks. So we've had a lot of volunteers in the community making cloth face masks, and we will be putting them to use for the hospital staff.
I'm one of those people that actually is a visitor right now every day at Mary Greeley due to a family. There's face masks that the hospital has been giving to us that were made by, they said, people in the community. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, across the country, of course, there have been people who have been stepping up to volunteer to make masks for local hospitals. And there are set patterns. And it is a great way to preserve the medical center's face masks that the clinical staff really needs. So we're hoping, well, first of all, by not allowing visitors in any longer, that is going to preserve masks. And then requiring everyone at the hospital to wear them, a good percentage of us will be wearing cloth masks, which, again, preserves those hospital-style masks that we really need for our clinical staff.
Well, my mask is very pretty. It's blue and has red flowers on it, so I like it. They have lots of different colors. It's very nice. Are these masks made locally, or where are you getting them from?
The majority of them, yes. They are made by people in the community who've stepped forward. There are sewing groups, for example, who've stepped forward. They're working through the hospital's foundation to make and donate these. So we're expecting, I think we have like almost 100 people sewing masks right now.
Are they using one distinct pattern, Steve, or are you using multiple patterns?
Yes, I believe. There are different forms. There are some that have strings. There are some that have more elastic bands that go around the ears. So there is a style to them. They're pleated. Some have where you can put filters in. So there are a variety of styles, but they are following patterns that we've received from an approved source. And I'm sorry, I don't know what that source is. And then have provided to the folks who are sewing them.
Well, they're very nice. I really like mine a lot. And thank you to all the folks that are making the masks. It's a very nice gift to get when you go into the hospital. You mentioned that you have 2 people in Mary Greeley that are positive. How about the rule-out cases, the people that are waiting for results? How many do you have in the hospital with that?
I can't say they're all in the hospital, but I know where we had, as of yesterday, we had 6 pending tests.
Uh-huh.
So there's always a handful of pending tests we anticipate every day. So far, all those pending have come back negative. Countywide, we do, as you noted, have 5 cases. Not all of them were tested through Mary Greeley, and not all of them were tested through McFarland. I know in at least 1 case, they were tested outside of Story County.
Mm-hmm. Well, that takes me to a question that a number of people have raised. There's kind of a quandary that people have been trying to figure out. One of the criteria that we've been told for getting a test is to know that you've been in contact with somebody who's been tested positive. Now, in our county, almost nobody has tested positive yet. So how do you actually have to know that you were with somebody who's tested positive in order to get a test? Because it's kind of hard to figure out how you would actually get a test.
Yeah. The Iowa Department of Public Health has, I believe it's 4 criteria for testing. Now, those are cases where the test, if those criteria are met, those tests can go to the state hygienic lab. If they don't meet those criteria, and a physician has to order the test, the physician would be able to have the test sent to what's called a reference lab. So they have broader criteria. The state hygienic lab tends to take a day or two to turn around. The reference labs take longer than that. So exposure is a criteria, sure. Travel, hospitalization can be one. And the criteria have evolved over time. Early in this situation, all we had was the state hygienic lab. In February, for example, all we had was a state hygienic lab. And then eventually we were allowed, and why say we, you know, any hospital or clinic was allowed to use these reference labs. So that expanded the opportunities for testing.
We received a release recently from the ISU Vet Clinic saying that they were going to be helping with testing. Does that apply to Ames, or is that mostly to help Iowa City?
It would be able to help the region, as far as I understand. And I'm not sure what the status of that is, because even when you say we can do tests, we're approved to do tests, but we don't have the materials, because the materials that you need to do the test right now are going to hotspots. So we don't necessarily have a group like us, but like the hospital, doesn't necessarily have access to those materials right now. We can do the sample collecting, but doing the actual test, we still have to send that out. And I know VetMed has been talking about it. I do not know the status of their ability to do that yet.
Over the weekend, Americans were told that they should wear masks for potential asymptomatic transmission. Okay, so I'm asymptomatic, potentially a carrier of the virus, spreading virus. How would a person know that they had been in contact with someone who had the virus if the person themselves didn't even know it?
No, you might not know that you've been near a person who may have it. But, you know, that contact, just walking by someone isn't going to do the trick. You do have to have close exposure. You have to be, exposed to droplets and that sort of thing. So the mask wearing, and that's one of the reasons, of course, we're going to start doing it at the hospital, is a key precaution. You're seeing more and more people out in the public with them. Not a lot, but still more and more. I suspect we'll see more as Iowa sees more cases, where the latest projections is that the surge, as they call it, will be coming in middle of the month.
You've talked about
that's what we're anticipating.
Yeah, you've talked about the staff, the administrative staff, et cetera, wearing masks now. How are things going with your clinical staff? What are your supplies look like in terms of being able to protect them when this anticipated surge arises?
We're feeling comfortable with supplies right now. And that's based on the projections we're seeing. So we're feeling good about supplies. We're constantly monitoring them as well and doing everything we can to not only build up our stocks, but also preserve what we have. That one of the reasons that, you know, elective surgeries have been discontinued is to preserve preserve PPE. Wearing the cloth masks, an extra layer of precaution, but using these cloth masks instead of the typical hospital mask is another way to preserve that PPE. We've taken a lot of steps. I have a number of hospitals to watch our usage and monitor the usage far closer. We have daily counts of everything, from masks to gowns and gloves. We are constantly looking at what our supplies look like, when we're anticipating to have more come in. It's a daily, hourly almost, review.
Where do you get your supplies from, your gowns and masks and tests?
Well, there are a variety of vendors that our supply management folks work with. I don't know their names off the top of my head, but we get from a variety of sources. And we belong to what's called the Premier Buying Group. So it's a group of healthcare organizations that have bigger buying power. So we're wired into that network. So we know who has what, when available. So our orders are already submitted and we're kind of in that stream of ordering so we can keep the inventory at the hospital going.
I've heard the university is helping out with making some equipment, some PPE kind of stuff. Are you getting anything from them?
Iowa State is fantastic. We just got about 1,000 face shields that some folks in the engineering college and Cirrus were able to create for us. They're also, Cirrus is also working with local and statewide industries to see if there are possibilities there. So as our CEO put it, Iowa State's helping and they're also helping others help. So what's interesting, and when we talked last week, we talked about how there are MacGyver moments during all of this, is what can we do to create this or fulfill this need? And Iowa State made face masks out of old overhead transparencies. Nobody uses that anymore. So they were able to utilize that source of plastic to make these face shields, which is terrific because everybody does PowerPoint now and nobody does overhead projections, but people have a stockpile of that plastic. And so they turned to that and made those.
Interesting.
It's very helpful. Very, very appreciative of it. And we're expecting more.
The federal emergency management funding for protective gear that was just came down in Iowa, will Mary Greeley benefit from that?
Story County Public Health will benefit from it.
Uh-huh.
So they've already gotten some deliveries, I know. So Story County Public Health is the recipient of those materials. They will be distributed throughout the county. Yes, we will get some of them, but so will other healthcare organizations in the county. Story County Public Health is based at the hospital, so those deliveries do come to the hospital, but they're managed by Story County Public Health.
When you say Story County Public Health, you mean the agency responsible for public health with the Board of Health in Story County?
Yeah, they're the folks who do the immunization clinics, for example, for kids. They're the ones who monitor. So when there is a case, when we have a positive case in the county, Story County Public Health nurses are the ones who reach out to those folks. They contact them. They talk to them about their households. They talk to them about their activity. They check in on them every day to see how they're doing. So their role is really to be the group that really watches over these folks and figures out those points of contact.
There's a clinic out by Nevada, but that's not a hospital where people would potentially go, right?
Story County Medical Center?
Yeah.
In Nevada? Yeah, people might go there. Absolutely. But they're more likely going to come to us, or they're going to come to McFarland, because you have to get it from a physician. And the majority of the physicians serving the county are based with McFarland. So they're most likely people are going to start with McFarland, or they'll start with us like when they come in through the emergency department, for example.
Steve, you told us about the change in policy about visitors to the hospital. Is there anything else that you would like to communicate to the public at this point?
Well, we know the visitation rule will be a disappointment to some people. You know, they have loved ones in the hospital. They want to be there for their loved one. But we just ask for their understanding and support. This is really for the safety of our patients, our visitors, and our staff. It also helps us preserve necessary PPE. We do have exceptions. Of course, if there's a laboring mom, they will have a support person. A child, of course, will be able to have a parent or two. People who are at the end of their life will be allowed visitors. So there are exceptions. We're trying to be as flexible as we can while keeping these safety, safeguards in place. We would ask that anybody who has questions about the policy, to call us at 23, you can call me at 239-2129. We've had some folks in birthways, for example, they've limited visitors, and we've had families who have been outside the hospital with signs welcoming babies. And that's terrific. We want to be sure that we're providing those opportunities to people should they want to do that, but we want to make sure we're doing it safely and make sure that they're getting into a place, a location outside of the hospital where their patient would most likely see them based on where they're at in the hospital.
Okay, well, thank you. Would you please again repeat what the symptoms are to watch for and what to do if you feel you have them?
The key symptoms are fever, dry cough, body aches, headache. Diarrhea can be, but really that fever, the dry cough, and the body aches tend to be the key ones to watch for. Refer to the CDC website or the Iowa Department of Public Health website. That's really where we send people for the most up-to-date and accurate information.
And if you do feel you have the symptoms, contact your doctor, right? Don't go to the hospital or the clinic.
We're not going to turn you away. But before you come in, make that call. Find out. McFarland has a system in place now where they have a nurse phone line that works Monday through Friday. If you call outside of those hours, it gets transferred to first nurse. But if you call during those hours, you get a phone line, you can talk about your symptoms. The nurse on that phone line is going to be able to help you out. Maybe you're going to be referred to your physician's department office so you can get in there. Maybe you're going to be referred to their screening process, which is out at their North Clinic. That's where they're trying to do all the testing for folks who call, who are screened, and it's determined, yeah, you probably need a test. Why don't you go here? And so they have that set up out at their North Clinic.
And the tests are done in the car?
In most cases, yes. That's to keep people at a distance, maintaining that social distance, of course, and it's just to really manage that so you don't have people who are potentially symptomatic going into the facilities where, you know, we're still treating people. The hospital, there's still people coming in and having babies. The clinic still has appointments with patients for various reasons, of course. So they're trying to maintain that, send those folks to the North Clinic if they need. We do have some people coming into the ED for one reason or another, and they may be suspected of having symptoms. And in a lot of those cases, it's determined they should be tested.
ED is emergency room?
Uninsured or doesn't have a personal physician, can they still call that number?
Yes.
It's always a concern. There are people in Story County and in the counties that we serve that are uninsured, and we want to be sure that if they're feeling ill or suspect that they might have COVID, that they have someone to contact.
Yeah, there's primary health care. Primary health center in Ames as well, and there's Marshalltown has a primary health center as well.
Can you give us the number, Steve? We'll put it on our website.
Okay. Here's the McFarland COVID-19 nurse phone line. It is 515-500-6711. 515-500-6711.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Steve Sullivan, Director of Marketing and Community Relations for Mary Greeley Medical Center. Any final thoughts you want to share before we part ways?
Wash your hands, stay home, wear a lovely mask.
Thank you so much.
I'm washing my hands so much, they're getting dry as a bone.
maybe noon. Empty shelves are all I see. I gotta find a store, cause I need some GP, but I can't leave. Oh, my hell, my good lose. I got the COVID-19, social distance, stay at home relief. I got the COVID-19, stay at home, social distance. When is this gonna end? I'm getting sick of this blues.
Social Distance Stay-at-Home Blues by Larry Stoltenberg, applying his craft to the changing times. Thank you for sharing with us, Larry.
Susan Guiazda is with us. Susan is Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Susan, you've been partnering with us on behalf of the city now for about 2 weeks, and we're very appreciative of the city officials and workers that you've brought to us daily for updates as the city adjusts to the new situation, the new normal. It's good to have you with us alone today so we can hear more from you at this time.
It's good to be here. You know, it's been an eventful couple of weeks, and we've changed a lot about the way that we do business at the City of Ames. We are often changing on the fly as new information becomes available. I think on Friday when we last talked, we mentioned that we had closed the playgrounds around city parks, and we had partnered with the Ames Community School District to close the playgrounds at the school elementary schools. So that was a change. And, you know, with every new way that we try to change the way we do things, we get feedback. And I was pleased that most people are very understanding of the playground closing. Unfortunately, in an era of social distancing, the playgrounds just proved to be too much, just too much of an enticement for young kids. And we were seeing too many of them playing on the playground at one point. And of course, you're worried about transmission of germs on playgrounds. So we really felt the best course of action was to close the playgrounds while leaving the green space and parks open. So that's
a difficult decision.
It is. Every decision you have to weigh the pros and cons on. And we got pushed back on the playgrounds. Some people said we did not go far enough. The skate park is still open. The parks are still open. Those are things that, you know, we've talked about it before on this show. You know, there's a connection of physical and mental health, and it is good to get outside. And so we don't want to close those venues to people. And if people use social distancing, amenities like the skate park can be used safely, but we need to make sure that's happening. So we're watching them. And so, I mean, I guess I don't want to be the mother to every child in the city, but I do feel like, hey, we're watching you. Show us you can do this. I feel like there's a little bit of that going on right now.
Well, in some ways, Susan, that's what community is all about. I heard that in the East Coast, Some cities are, in fact, tying the nets to basketball courts to stop spontaneous games from sprouting up. Has Ames done something like that?
So that was another pushback that we got, was the basketball nets should be removed, the poles should be taken down, we should not allow basketball. But in a sense, one child or one adult shooting hoops is not a problem. And so for some people, that is a stress reliever, and that is something that they look forward to. Taking the hoops down for some people would be detrimental. The problem, as you have noted, is when you get a pickup game and you get, you know, 10 people playing basketball, that's not 6-foot social distancing. That is not safe. And so we continue to kind of tread this line. Playing tennis seems like that would be a game that naturally social distance you. In most cases, you're not that close when you're playing tennis. If for some reason you end up with 8 people on the tennis court, that's a problem. So we're trying to allow venues so people can get physical exercise and can have some recreation in their lives. You know, it's getting nicer. It's supposed to be very nice this week. and getting outside is important. It's good for your physical health. It's good for your mental health. So we're really relying on people to do the right thing. There is another factor at play here. When we devote a lot of resources to covering playgrounds and snow fence or removing basketball poles, you know, that's labor and materials that are diverted from other business of the city. We have regular business of the city to get done. We're in the midst of hydrant flushing right now. This is the time of year where we send crews all over the city to flush out the hydrants. And there are a lot of reasons why we flush hydrants for safety. We check the hydrants to make sure they're functioning correctly. We discharge a lot of minerals and build up in the water mains. Also, this is the time of year with temperature fluctuations where we get water main breaks. So we had a water main break over the weekend. That kind of thing continues to happen. People have noted that the paint on the streets has faded. Paint always fades over a winter. All the chemical treatment we put on the streets to treat the streets for ice and snow, the plowing, those take their toll on the painting. We are going to get out and be repainting those streets soon. We have the work of the city that needs to continue and get done. And when you divert that time and labor to other things, it's always this balancing act of, we did get questions. Why didn't we snow fence off the playgrounds? Well, we're hoping that people will do the right thing. We've put the signs out. We've told people, please stay off. This is in your own best interest to stay off. And we're hoping that the community will help us. This, you know, this village that we have, we hope that it will help us reinforce that correct message of appropriate behavior so we don't have to snow fence off. And then in a couple of months, remove all that snow fence and, you know, save it for the next event. We do try to be good fiscal, responsible stewards of city money. And so every choice has consequences. Everything we do, we have to weigh against sort of a pro and con list. And it's tricky. It's tricky to know that we're doing the right thing.
So, Susan, what you're saying right here, right now, on the radio is, please help us do that by doing the right thing. Help us run the city and talk to your children to help the city keep us all safe and to do what it needs to do, right?
Absolutely. I think everybody knows the rules and everybody knows what they should be doing. And maybe a gentle reminder or a prompt to somebody who's not doing it correctly. Or if you feel that you're not in a position to do that, or you noticed something, you can certainly call us. You know, we have a city hotline that's set up Monday through Friday during regular business hours, 239-5670. If you see a huge congregation of people at a skate park, or you see a playground that's being used frequently, let us know. We will send people out and we will talk to them. Maybe, you know, they didn't understand or they just need a reminder. And we're happy to do that. I think that if we rely on people to do the right thing and we don't have to put a lot of time and material into ensuring that they do the right thing, I think that makes us all a little better off in the long run.
Susan, one of the ways to do the right thing is to take care of oneself, not just, you know, worrying so much about what others are doing. So Ames has a pretty extensive network of trails. And as we noted earlier, people can walk at a safe social distance. Where can people get more information about the trail system?
Well, we have a lot of maps on our website, cityofames.org. You look for the maps or the GIS tab, and you can find the shared use path maps, which are, most people would call them bike paths. Those are listed on that. We have paper copies, but I'm not sure that there's a place right now that you can get them. So it really is digitally based. You'd have to go on the website and look for those. The nice thing is that the digital maps are updated. We do continue to grow that network of paths. And so the digital maps are the most up-to-date ones. That includes we've done striping like on a street. So it may be an on-street shared use path. You could walk on the sidewalk on those, but you would want to perhaps bike on the street on those. And then it also includes the specific paths that are just for bikers or pedestrians. And, you know, it really is pretty amazing. You can get all around the town by using those paths. And this is a great opportunity to explore those ones you haven't been on yet. One of the ones I really enjoy is if you are going south on you're by the Furman Aquatic Center, we just put lights into the path that goes into Brookside Park. So we found that it is a really popular commuter route. So people are using it not just to recreate, but they're using it to get around town. And we put the lights in because in the fall it gets dark so early that people were saying, hey, I can't get off work and still get my path home and it's too dark. So we put lights in. So if you look just south of Furman, there's a nice trail there. There's the light that you can cross 13th Street with and go right through Brookside Park. It's really a nice trail. I encourage everybody to go if they haven't seen it yet.
Susan, what else would you like to say before we check out?
So as you know, we closed all public facilities to the public. City Hall, you know, the ice arena, the intermunicipal swimming pool, all city buildings are closed to the public. We had, up until last Friday, we kept the kiosk staffed, which is a little area, a greeting area when you come in City Hall, to take walk-in customers. We have since closed that, so the kiosk is closed. If you need to get information to City Hall, most people are trying to drop off bills, and we still have the drop box located right in front of the building. But because city staff are in their offices, you can call. The drop box is not good for oversized envelopes. So if for some reason you needed to get an oversized envelope to the City of Ames, you just need to call the appropriate office and make arrangements that way. But again, we are still taking your utility bill payments. Drop them in the mailbox. There is an online bill pay system through our website. Lots of people are discovering that. So I encourage you to continue to follow the website for more information. Call the hotline if you have questions. Call city staff if you have, if you need to talk to somebody. And just remember, you know, we're here and we're working for you and, you know, connect with us if you have a concern.
And what is the hotline?
239-5670.
239-5670. Thank you very much, Susan, and thank you for being with us every day. We really appreciate it very much, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. And now it is time for Anna Banana.
So greetings, my KHO family. It is Anna Banana with KHOI's Heart-to-Heart Messages. And this past week, Ursula, you facilitated a conversation with two well-respected mental health experts to discuss creating a radio show for children. Dr. Earl Kelly, who retired as the CEO of Orchard Place in Des Moines and brought Ireley Ball to Story County, and Earl's counterpart, Dr. Donna Dudney, talked about how we should be asking children for their thoughts and reactions to the COVID-19 pandemic, because we will more than likely find wisdom, insight, and courage in what they have to say. After all, their worlds have also been turned upside down with what is going on. Not going to school is a big deal because it means they will not see their teachers and friends. And for some, that doesn't mean changes the world completely. They're either not carrying on with their lessons or they're having to completely change how they're learning with online options. And today we heard Susan talk about how their playgrounds are closed, which is absolutely the right decision. And so Susan and Steve Sullen, thank you so much for protecting and safeguarding the health of our communities. But as Susan said, too, it's tricky to know how to do the right thing because you want to be have people be safe, but you also want to protect their mental health as well so they can go out and play and not to generate undue fear. But what Susan and Steve are talking about and what they're suggesting are all to protect us, and that's the hard thing because Susan also said that it's hard to be the mother to the community, and it is hard being a parent because you want your children to be safe. So I felt today was really important to talk about and giving children a voice in this discussion. And so over the weekend, I hope you don't mind, but I wanted to get children's messages, so I turned to my family. Because they're listening and watching to very adult messages, our children. They're hearing and seeing, hearing and seeing stories that makes me, a 47-year-old woman, panic with fear and worry. So I can't imagine being 10, 5, 12. So I reached out to my nieces ranging in ages from 5 to 14 years old, and I asked them to submit their messages for me to read on air. So my first heart-to-heart message is from Sierra, an 11-year-old who is a sixth grader living just 15 minutes away from Ames, and her auntie, Anna Banana. So she emailed me the following. Hello, every beautiful person. I hope you guys are coping with these very hard conditions. Just breathe a prayer for each other. Stay safe and happy. So I thank you, Sierra, for providing this heart-to-heart message, acknowledging that these are difficult days, but wishing everyone well. Now, her twin sister, who is obviously also an 11-year-old since she's Sierra's twin, provided a heart-to-heart message as well. Now, Audrey sent me her message in a Google Doc, which impressed me greatly as I can barely handle sending a basic email with an attachment that, hey, I'm getting to be a dinosaur, right? Well, that's another subject. But back to Audrey's heart-to-heart message, which is the following. I hope everyone is staying safe and healthy during this hard time. Thank you to all the nurses, doctors, and volunteers that have been working very hard during the virus. Also, another thank you to Aunt Simone for educating me to keep my brain filled with knowledge, doing an online book club and lessons online. So thank you, Audrey, for sending this very well-written and kind heart-to-heart message for me to read on air. And no worries, I'm not jealous at all that you gave Aunt Simone a shout-out and not your Auntie Anna Banana, who is a cool, fun aunt who gets you frappuccinos, black licorice, and boxes of chicken and a biscuit crackers. Whatevs. I understand that Auntie Simone is keeping you from being bored during this break from school. Now, perhaps the KHOI local talk listeners may remember I did mention my sister, Dr. Simone Soderberg, who teaches at Grandview University last week. Well, when I read her what our nieces wrote, she submitted her own heart-to-heart message to be paired with Audrey's. And she writes, you don't need to be in a building to learn. After all, Abraham Lincoln could be described as a non-traditional learner. One biographer wrote that our 16th president had very little formal education, but read voraciously when not working on his father's farm. A childhood friend later recalled Lincoln's manic intellect and the sight of him red-eyed and tousle-haired as he pored over books late into the night. So with that, I say learn something new every day. Pursue your curiosities about the world around you. Check out the free online resources that are available now, like virtual museum exhibits. Don't worry about keeping up. Just make sure that you're learning something new every day. Well, thank you, my little smarty pants little sister, for your heart-to-heart message. So now our niece's older sister, Juliet, who's 14 years old, lives in Arizona, and the girls have become accustomed to being separated by 1,397 miles, and they learned to stay connected long before COVID-19. Juliet sent this heart-to-heart message, which is more for her family. I want to thank everyone in my family, Grandma Terry for being there for me and such a sweet person, Tom for being such a good dad to my sisters for being the most wonderful little sisters ever out there, for always everyone in the Soderberg family for the most amazing family. I love you guys. Thank you, Juliet, for sending this heart-to-heart message across the miles to Cambridge, Des Moines, and Ames, Iowa. And finally, my heart-to-heart message is from my niece, Rowan, who is 5 years old. So she talked, and I transcribed the following. Yes, I want to tell everyone that I love them. I wish all my friends and family to stay home. And do you know that I know how to say Ottoman? And do you know that my very first big word that I said when I was a baby? Flamingo. Okay, there you go. You heard it from Rowan. Beyond the first big word that she proudly proclaimed being able to say at the age of 2, she possesses common sense even at 5, asking for family and friends to stay home and to stay safe. So thank you, Sierra, Audrey, Simone, Juliet, Ron, for these heart-to-heart messages from children and one adult in our community who are connected to our community, who love and care for their friends and family, no matter where they are or what they're going in this world. So we hope that our heart-to-heart messages inspire you to connect to our community. And from the bottom of our hearts, KHOI thanks you for listening, and we send out our love to each of you.
And thank you, Anna Banana, for your heart-to-heart messages. And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI. I've been one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening.
And I've been your other host, Ann Kinzel. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard We'll Get Through This Together and Social Distancing, Stay-at-Home Blues by Larry Stoltenberg.
We're pleased to announce that starting on Wednesday at noon, the Ames Public Library will begin a program on KHOI. They will be spending the first half hour from 12 until 12:30 with a children's storytelling hour. And in the second half hour, they will bring you news from the library and resources for adults. Mark your calendar for this great new program coming to KHOI, working together with the community. It's always a pleasure. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Always. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.